NFL podcast. Opted out of training camp.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name's Dan Hansis. Come to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. Oh, but that's not all. It is draft week. And because it's draft week, we're going to have a full slate of shows. Special guests up the butt. Weird choice of words there.
Yeah. Very perfect.
Yeah, but that means a lot.
It's got butt on your mind, I guess.
I guess so. Up the wazoo, which is, I think, the same thing. Anyway, there's a fourth on the show today, and it's been too long. Hit it, Ricky.
It's Tiny Fox, y'all. It's Tiny Fox, y'all. One of them heroes with the news and all them locks, y'all.
There's a new one?
Cardi flow, married to Gonzo. Ooh. She repping Ooh. Philly and Miami, traveling all the globe.
Extended version it's or something? Low. I like this.
I like this.
The history is very, very rich.
Yes, it's Colleen Wolf. And yes,
what's
that is...
up?
That was one of Connie, one of the participants in the Make Connie's Theme Song contest. Not a victor, but figured we'd bring back one of the honorable mentions. And, that one, as the kids say, slaps.
I don't remember that one being so good, but yeah. I'm really into that. I like it. I need a copy. I'm just going to ride around.
I feel like that's the first time we've heard that song since Colleen was on and was picking her quarantine house, the same show where...
No, don't say it. Don't bring it up.
Where she said the mayor of New York was, like, strikingly handsome. A comment that hasn't aged. Oh.
At that time, that was a popular opinion. Right. Had I known what I know now, I would have absolutely not put him in my quarantine house. But we all make mistakes, and we learn from them. And I learned a lot from that day and that exercise.
Yeah. I love that. Colleen, no, don't worry. That Greg is deeply embedded in cancel culture and has an updated notebook for anyone who gets removed from society. So he's on that beat.
Thanks, I was wondering Greg, where you're going with that, Greg. And then I saw Colleen's face turn sour. And I was like, oh, he's about to land a haymaker here. And it was the Cuomo.
It was. It was the All Cuomo right. I'll own up uppercut. To it because
it was
accountability is
time.
Important.
It well, was, I mean, there was a lot we didn't know back then.
In Colleen's defense. Mark also was going to chain Gail Godot to a radiator to teach her a lesson at the beginning of the pandemic. As I
What's
recall.
The problem with that?
Well, we were all in different places. It was a tough time.
I stick by that modus of operandi.
This is Colleen Week, though. She's Mrs. Draft. I mean, she's got her own podcast about the draft.
Yeah, what's
I
going do. On with that, Connie? Tell us about well, that. How did it happen? How's it going?
Okay, it's good. That's why I haven't been on in a while, because I've been doing this. You know, it's weird. I've never – it's a lot different than doing the shows on the network, doing a podcast and just with one other person. Mm. So as it turns out, working is a lot of work. So I've been really busy with it. But you guys can check that out on the clock. I've talked to a bunch of different prospects. They all have some really funny, cool, different background stories. It's been nice. It's been a learning experience, Dan.
Who's your favorite? Who's been one? If we were going to check out one to start with, where would you start?
I like the Justin Hilliard one was good. And then also Benjamin St. Just. He's French Canadian. I've been having a hard time saying his name, which is problematic because promoting it is an issue if I don't really know the correct way to pronounce his name. But he has so many different fun facts, including one that he gave a pair of J's to the Pope. So. There's that.
Wow. I'd love to see you sneak in a fake person who just see how many people catch up to. Be like, this is a from the wilderness prospect. We love his story. And then totally create a deep fiction and see if anyone notices.
I'm down. Will you do it with me?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I will. All right. That's so my draft knowledge in a nutshell. So
make sure you check out On the Clock with Connie Fox. Do that. And also, we have so many great resources for the draft. It's just... 72 hours away at this point, 96 hours away, who's counting? Later on in today's show, Lance Zierlein, another favorite of the show, draft analyst for NFL.com, NFL Network, works down in Houston. He's going to join us to give his takes on what's going to go down in Cleveland. And Connie, you're going to be in Cleveland as well, and I always love your role at the draft because you're very front and center on NFL Network in a lot of ways with the programming. But this is the one where you're amongst the people. And as an added bonus, the always on the edge of insanity, yes, Michael Irvin is with you. So that feels like it's going to be great. You're part of the live show for NFL media.
Right. So we are the in-venue, the people that come out in between the picks and basically entertain the crowd. So we're like draft hype men. And it's really probably one of my favorite assignments of the entire year because it's not serious at all. And I'm with Michael Irvin for the whole night. So it's always fun and entertaining.
What's Irvin like? Like, because we're kind of kept in a bubble. We're like the kids' table of NFL media. Mm-hmm. But the secret to it is, like at Thanksgiving dinner, the kids' table is where the fun is. We don't really strive to sit.
And they're left alone. They're like left alone. There's less rules over
there. We don't strive to sit at the grown-up table at NFL media. We like where we are. But sometimes there are some drawbacks. So that means like Michael Irvin's always at the grown-ups table. So we've really never really interfaced with him professionally. So I only know him the way the public does, which is kind of this high amped up guy who's always yelling and fired up about something. What's Irvin like when you're like just sitting on a couch in a green room? Is he just like, big show coming up, looking forward to this? Or is it, I can't wait for this show. It's going to be amazing. Like,
It's the latter. It's 10 out of 10 energy scale all the time. And I think we all know that I really belong at the kids' table. I was just somehow dropped onto the adult table into that mix. But Irv is like that all the time, to the point where we'll be having a production meeting for Thursday Night Football. And he will come in like straight from the gym with his workout gloves still on, and he'll start doing a whole thing just to himself. And we're like, well, who's he talking to right now? Is this part of the show? And he's just doing his own sort of sermon off to the side to the eggs. Like it's really entertaining.
Reminds me of Mark before some of our live shows in the past. Sure, replete with the exercise gloves.
I would say it's a chore for you, Colin. You have to keep up that Michael Irvin level energy yourself the entire time. So, you know, maybe put some things into the bloodstream that will help that become more of an organic process.
Well, I will say, like, the next day I basically just have to stare at a wall because I'm drained of all life and creativity and ideas after something like that.
That's true, though. But you also essentially play the straight man on this, or the straight woman, right, to Irvin. So you don't – if you had to match Irvin's intensity – like, your head might explode by the 24th pick. So it's almost better that you're just yourself, you're Connie, you're chill, and then he's doing his Irvin thing. It's a pretty good buddy cop combo, I got to say.
It's perfect. And the first time I ever did this was when the draft was in Dallas, and they had me with Michael Irvin in Dallas for the draft. And I had never worked with him for one segment, one show, anything before. And I was so nervous about it because I'm like, what is this going to be like? I really don't know him that well. We've never really interacted. And now, having done multiple drafts with him and Thursday Night Football, it's so easy to just put the quarter in and let him go because now I know what those buttons all are. It's great.
Very good. Very good. Well, Connie, we're just happy that you're back here. You've never forgotten your roots. We've always liked that about you, and that's why you're the tiny box. So before Lance Zierlein, let us get caught up on the news in the NFL.
There's so much news that's happened.
With the 22nd pick in the 2014 NFL draft, the Cleveland Browns select Johnny Manziel. Yeah!
It's a boy on Christmas. Father Christmas has come.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know. Mark Sessler, it is 9 years ago today that we were sitting next to each other at Radio City Music Hall, and the Cleveland Browns selected Johnny Manziel, I believe, with the 22nd overall pick in that draft. And I'll always remember it because before everything went south for that draft, and that was a very bad draft for the Browns, looking back, That was a great night in New York City because it felt like there was a lot of excitement around Manziel, and you know, it didn't work out, but we always had that night.
Yeah, what a simpleton and a rube I was that evening. But I couldn't know the future. I mean, I think a lot of people had a reason to be excited about the fact that he was going to be a quarterback somewhere. And I, you know, I should have known the minute that it happened that Sheck, who seemed to have arrived from the future, was just jabbing me left and right with verbal questions, you know, knowing how this thing would turn out. And, you know, what a doomed affair. But maybe Justin Gilbert was the worst pick. I mean, that's the crazy thing about all that.
Mm. I mean, that Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow are reminders that none of these draft analysts or teams know anything, because those were popular picks at the time. There were tons of highly paid draft analysts who all loved Tim Tebow in the first round or Johnny Manziel in the first round, honking that night like the Browns had changed everything.
And I miss being together with everybody for a moment like that, because now we can't do, now we can't be in Sessler's face like with a camera or anything. It used to be a lot more fun.
Maybe
next
one
year,
day.
Next year.
Yeah,
next
maybe
year.
One day we will be again. And what you don't see, and that's a somewhat famous YouTube clip within the annals of Around the NFL history, and you could find it if you care to seek it out. What you don't see in that clip is literally right running alongside us on the aisle while this was happening is Drake, who was like best buddies with Johnny Manziel at the time. And he ran right up, and you saw him run up the stairs into like the green room area, I guess, to celebrate and begin the partying for Johnny Manziel, which really went on for the next 5 years or so, and maybe still is, who knows. But wherever you are, Johnny Manziel, I hope you're doing okay, buddy. And you're doing okay, Mark. It's, you know what's interesting? For the last, and I don't think Baker has necessarily been a slam dunk, like, you know, you're set for 10 years, but he's been good enough and has had moments, and the Browns are coming off a great season, where you haven't even been in discussions for a quarterback pick in the draft for 4 years now, which is a big difference from the previous like 10 to 12 to 15 years of your fandom.
Yeah, but I also noticed that like that, what that visceral reaction that came out of me due to a football maneuver, like that hasn't happened in 5+ years. So I need to, you know, I need to look deeper as to why that's occurring.
All right, let's do some news. We'll start with a nugget from Peter King. And I think it's important to note here, because Peter King himself made sure in his Monday morning quarterback column to note that this was not his report. It wasn't based necessarily on hard info as in terms of something coming imminently. But the fact that he put it into his column 4 days before the draft is interesting. He reported that he would not be surprised if the Atlanta Falcons traded Julio Jones this offseason. And Rap Sheet then added on his own reporting that the Falcons are, quote, at least toying with the idea of trading Julio Jones. He's 32 years old. He's coming off a year where he's been banged up. But Mark, this is a guy who means so much to the organization, but it's also an organization in transition. Where do you come down on this?
Well, I feel like I've been banging this drum about Atlanta's cap situation.
That's a good point. Hang on a second. And now it's time for another edition of Mark Sessler frets about the Falcons' salary cap situation. Go ahead, buddy.
Well, I noticed that the topic bubbled up suddenly on NFL Network today as if it had become relevant in the wake of this news. I mean, King also notes they don't want to
trade.
Did
they mention how many players are under contract with the
Falcons?
Exactly, Greg. That's your main thing.
They have an NFL low, 56 players. I just checked before the broadcast here. And they are about $6 million under the cap. So the part of this is desperation, trying to like get their roster under control, because there are questions about how they can, you know, at this point, even like, you know, sign their rookie class. You can't really move Julio Jones before June 1st. I mean, you could agree to something, I guess, but like this isn't the Falcons wanting to move on from Julio Jones. This is the Falcons like sort of saying, look, we're kind of effed here. And a couple of teams, maybe a team like the Raiders, who you could see doing something like this, coming and taking Jones's huge salary away from Atlanta.
I think it's all intentional. There's a lot I don't believe during draft week. And number one is that, like, that this isn't all on purpose. You know, Peter King puts that in his column on the same day that Ian reports that teams are asking to trade for him, on the same day that Albert Breer puts it in his column. Like, the Falcons are putting this out there. That's my sleuth work. I didn't ask Ian or anything. So I think they're coming into this offseason knowing Julio Jones might be on the roster, probably even on the roster, and they can easily fit him under the cap. You can move money around. I don't think that's a huge concern. But is he going to be a part of their future? That's an open question. Is he going to be on the roster next year? That's an open question. Let's put it out there and see what kind of offers we can get. And the key thing in Ian's report, I think, was that they might agree to a trade now and it wouldn't be, you know, executed officially until after June 1st. And then they save $15 million in cap room, and who knows what they get. It's a little complicated, but I think this is saying it's putting a for sale sign on Julio Jones, saying if we get enough, we would deal him.
That contract is fully guaranteed too, so they can't cut him. They would have to trade him to break free of that deal. And it's going to be tough, I think, to find maybe a taker just because of the money in that contract, and also the fact, like, his injury history. He didn't play half the season last year. So there's that, and the fact that, like, obviously the Falcons can't be thrilled that they gave Julio all of this money and then he just didn't live up to the production of that deal, whether it was through his own fault or because of the way that the team was constructed. But for me, I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, so does this signal that they're going to, it's a rebuild at this point, and they're going to take a quarterback because they're going to sell Julio, try to sell him to get out from under that cap space and make some other moves? Or does it mean that they're going to take Kyle Pitts to replace Julio as a pass catcher?
Very interesting. I mean, I feel like, and I understand this could go sour, maybe not AJ Green's age 32 season sour, but, you know, it could be a shaky move where you give up good draft assets and you take on this big salary and then he's off the field for half the year and then you have egg on your face. But if you're a team that's right there and you feel like you need that last piece, I feel like he's a great roll of the dice. He's an all-time player. And I think, I don't know, Greg, when you were watching the tape on Jones, when he was healthy, did he still seem like Julio Jones to you? I know Calvin Ridley has eclipsed him in some ways statistically, but he still feels like a big-time player.
Julio was so explosive last year. Julio looked awesome last year. He made more big plays than usual when he played. And people think of him as injury prone, but that was really the first year where he's missed significant games was last year. The question, I guess, would be like, what is a fair price? It's really tricky. Mm-hmm. I think teams would be fine taking on his contract, but do you want to give up like a real deal draft pick to pay that contract? That's where it gets a little complicated. Or are you just saying, oh, we'll take him from you, Atlanta, but we're not going to give anything up? That seems like a very tricky kind of thread or needle to thread.
What's fair?
He had the broken foot season, by the way. He had the broken foot season in 2013, and he's been banged up a lot. But Greg's right. For the most part, this is a guy that plays 14 to 16 games every year, and he is your guy. Speaking of what's fair, what's fair value? I found this really interesting. A big trade went down. The Chiefs continued the do-over and the makeover of their offensive line, acquiring Orlando Brown, the tackle from the Baltimore Ravens, as well as the 58th overall pick in the 2021 draft. That's a second rounder. And a 2022 sixth round selection from the Ravens in exchange for the number 31 overall pick in the first round on Thursday night, a 2021 third and fourth round pick, and a fifth round selection in the 22 draft. A lot of pieces here. The big picture and the most important end of this is that it's another major move for the Chiefs. I wonder, you know, not to get off track here, speaking about the salary cap, how do you pay Orlando Brown if he has a big season as your left tackle this year with all these other contracts you have in Kansas City? Not my problem. I'm not going to worry about it. But the big picture here is that they really have done a great job, Kansas City, rebuilding this line, knowing how important it is with the best player on earth playing quarterback. And then what's the value? Mark, this was interesting going back to Peter King, and we were talking about the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart, and there's all other trade value charts that are floating around the NFL. But to get this specific trade in place, they relied heavily, the two teams, on a chart to figure out what is Orlando Brown worth right now. And it's just interesting to see how the sausage gets made there.
I think part of it is Baltimore. I don't think they ever wanted to lose Orlando Brown. They're doing right by him because his goal, and he talked about this in the reporting, is that he wants to honor his father by playing left tackle his entire career. He's 24 years old. I don't think outside of quarterback there's a tougher position to go find like a blue chip player, a guaranteed player at than left tackle. And the Chiefs have done that. We spent 5 weeks, you know, fretting and moaning about what would happen to their offensive line. How would they handle this? Bang, here they are. They have Orlando Brown next to Joe Tooney, Austin Blythe, Kyle Long, and Mike Remmers, and they could get Eric Fisher back or someone else. So it's like they're in fine shape. And I love this for the Chiefs. I don't really care how much it costs. For the Ravens, I mean, I don't know. I guess, again, I think they try to honor Orlando Brown and do the best they can. They got picks in return, but I don't like the trade at all for Baltimore. I just don't.
A bit of a bet, you know, a bit of a dare to trade it to the best mm-hmm. team in the AFC. I see it a little bit as a bet against Orlando Brown. I mean, I think if they thought Orlando
Did they have a
Brown,
choice?
Yes. You definitely have a choice. You can call his bluff and say, you know, what, you're not going to play football this year? Like, he wanted to go, but he wasn't banging the drum that hard. You know, you could have kept him. They already paid Ronnie Stanley the highest paid left tackle in the league. So they probably were looking at a situation where they weren't going to pay him both. But he, you know, he came into the draft. The reason he slipped to round three was some, you know, maturity questions or whatever. I don't know what's going on because he's played really well. But to give up that good a player to the Chiefs feels like a slight bet against them. And you got a lot of picks. I mean, you got a first, a third, and a fourth. I mean, that's a lot. You know,
it could be a bet against them, or it could be at the end of the day, they're like, what's the best value we can get for this guy if we know he's unhappy and we don't see him as our future?
That's
and the
how
Chiefs
I see it.
Just so happen to be this team that is in dire need of a makeover, you right. know, so you had to roll
You're
the
getting
dice
a first and a third and a fourth instead of 1 year of Orlando Brown. Basically, I think they made the decision. You're not going to give him the contract next year. That's a lot. That's pretty good. I would trade that. And because the Chiefs still have to give him that contract. It doesn't come with it. It's very expensive for the Chiefs.
They wanted Trent Williams, but obviously he re-signed with the Niners. So I think Orlando Brown did a good job last year filling in for Ronnie Stanley. 11 games he played. And according to PFF, he allowed no sacks or quarterback hits in 700 snaps at left tackle. So he got the taste of starting at left tackle. And that's what he's always wanted to do. And that's what his dad wanted him to do. So I think that I like what he did. I kind of respect that he tweeted out, I'm a left tackle. And then this happened. So if they were betting against him, I hope that they were wrong. And the Chiefs offensive line, they also get Laurent Duvernay-Tardif back because he had opted out from COVID. And I think one other guy, too, who would be a depth kind of more of a player. But they have a lot of options now. And that was their biggest problem coming into this offseason was the offensive line there in Kansas City.
I mean, from Orlando's perspective, what if they took the four of us and stuck us into the IT department and you're working Sundays or people calling you up saying, you know, I'm having issues with Cisco Connect. It's like I'd jump out of a window. So I would fight for what I believe I should be doing with my career, too. So mm-hmm. more power to him.
Right. And he's got the Chiefs over a barrel like Tunsil had with the Texans when he got traded there, because they sort of have to give him a huge
But they
contract.
Know that.
Right. No, they know that. But they haven't done it yet. You know, it's like they still have to make it happen. They know that. And they're going to have to give him a top of the market contract.
I mean, they got Mahomes, obviously. Signed a $500 million deal. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Joe Tooney, as we just said. We got paid the biggest guard money in the league. Frank Clark, Honey Badger. You would think if he plays at a level that they want him to and he's a quality left tackle, they're going to have to make some hard decisions for other established guys on the roster to get this guy under a long-term deal, and that's where all that leverage comes in. Rick, by the way, Connie, what have you done to honor your father?
I learned how to fly.
Whoa, that's pretty good. What an answer.
What else? Next?
The old man was at, what have I don't know. I talk about the Jets for a living. I feel like that's pretty good. But your dad, air traffic controller for decades.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he flies himself, I imagine?
He's a flight instructor. He was in the Air Force, and so he taught me to fly. So when I was in college, my freshman year.
Pretty good.
I was going to flight school and, you know, full-time college at the same time. And I put in some good hours. So that's what I've been doing.
Well,
the first time I met your father.
Daddy's girl.
The first time I met your father, he also said that he witnessed a UFO while flying for the military. So
absolutely. He did. 100%.
Well, plus you set up the dad convention. What is that called? Dad's weekend?
Nope. It's the dad summit. And I'm just happy to announce it is coming back this year. But we're doing it the weekend before Father's Day. So everybody mark it down.
All right. There you go. The Dad Summit is coming back to SoCal. All right. Moving on. Here's a report from Ian this morning.
Yeah, my understanding of the 49ers situation is they have narrowed down their choice to two. And obviously, as you mentioned, Trevor Lawrence goes one, Zach Wilson goes two. The 49ers are at right now either Alabama quarterback Mac Jones or North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance, which means they are unlikely or certain not to take Justin Fields at number three.
All right. So, according to Rap Sheet, that's it. Justin Fields is out of the discussion at number three for the Niners. Read the tea leaves on this one, Greg.
I'm into the conspiracy theory that this is a bunch of hokum.
Same.
Like, from that maybe even, and I'm not saying I have any information here, but maybe even is pushed down from the highest of the high at the NFL. Because I have heard things or whispers in the past, and I think you can just look at the public coverage as a fan over the last 5 years, whether it was the Jared Goff draft or the Baker Mayfield draft, and like how they've tried to keep as much uncertain going into draft night as humanly possible. It's a TV event that the teams have cooperated on some level with this. In this draft where one and two seem like everyone knows what they are already, that that something's going on here that doesn't smell right. I mean, it defies credulity that like the 49ers haven't decided their pick 3 days before the draft. Of course they decided their pick. Give me a break.
I think they decided their pick a long time ago to give up everything that they gave up to get to three. And with the Robert Sala connection, they obviously know exactly what's going to be available to them. So you're telling me that they gave up all of this draft capital to not have a certain decision? I mean, there's no way. But then I text a couple people here, a couple people there, and I'm hearing like, okay, I think it's Mac Jones or I think it's Trey Lance. So I have no idea. I don't understand.
Right, we still don't know who it is. I'm not saying I know it's definitely or that anyone should feel like they know who it is necessarily. But it feels like, hey, what can we report? Can we at least cross out Justin Fields? Can you let us do that at least? And it's like, okay, because it's not just our network. It's the main network. It's the ESPN too that is reporting a similar thing. So it's like, okay, let's cross off Justin Fields. At least we can report that. But we're not allowed to report anything else, or we don't know anything else.
Is it ESPN2 reporting, like the Jim Rome show in all lowercase letters?
ESPN as
fighting
well,
with Jim Everett,
I should say.
I mean, I think it's fair that like they moved up to number three, perhaps weighing between a couple people. I mean, there are reports that, you know, the scouting staff is really into Lance, but maybe, you know, Shanahan is not. And so there could be some battling inside the building, or at least, I guess, just discussion. But to me, like, it is it magnifies the utter absurdity of these lead-up weeks.
I know.
Come on, Thursday night, get here.
Right, because we're studying this like the fans of a show on Reddit. Like, what's going to happen in the next episode? I think the show is in the can. We don't know, but they know. And right. It highlights the utter absurdity of Twitter this week. Football Twitter, to me, has gone utterly mental. I mean, I just like none of this is all the Niners don't care what anyone thinks. It's their prerogative. And I don't think that they're running around with their hair on fire, wondering what to do on Monday morning before the draft.
In other draft speculation news, several teams, according to Tom Pelissero, have been making calls about getting into the top 10 of this week's NFL draft, including the Patriots.
Greggy,
who could have their eyes on Justin Fields if he begins to slide. Listen, in the past, you would say that's not a Patriots move. But, and we talked about this with former director of pro personnel there, Scott Pioli, on our network show on Friday. You know, the Patriots aren't doing very Patriots-y things right now. Look at their free agent spending. Is this the year where they get crazy, Greg, and move way up and get that QB?
You gotta put in the groundwork ahead of the week. So that makes sense to me that a lot of teams in Fields, you know, just putting my cards out there as a Patriots fan, that's what I'd want. That would be the dream scenario, is for them to end up with Justin Fields, whether they're trading up or not. I'm not so sure about Trey Lance. And it's not like they haven't done it before. They traded up for Chandler Jones and they traded up for Dont'a Hightower. It's like think, you know, over time, if they have a player that you would really want, I like it because you look at some of the teams that are up there, like Detroit, I could see them trading with them, Carolina, like you can see some organizations that they could, that they would make a deal with. And that would be fun. Put Justin
Fields.
I would
ask this, like, I mean, if there was a scenario where the Dolphins at number six allowed New England into their spot to pick a quarterback, that feels like something is rotten inside the AFC East. But number two, if I'm the Detroit Lions and you're their new general manager, Brad Holmes, who spent the last number of years hanging out with Les Snead in New York and then traded for Jared Goff, do we really believe that Brad Holmes and Les Snead didn't drink like 100 whiskeys together discussing the shortcomings of Jared Goff? You think that the Lions are sold on Jared Goff?
Good,
that was a
too.
Move to help both teams. And so what do you do?
Japanese
if they
whiskey.
Don't allow the, if the Lions don't pick Fields at number seven, if he falls to them, I'm mystified as to what their purpose is, because that feels like the place you have to get that quarterback if you're New England.
But the Lions never make decisions that make sense. So I think that if Justin Fields is going to go anywhere, I love the fit in New England with Cam Newton there. They're sort of the same type of mobile quarterback. And it feels like Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, they finally got a mobile quarterback in there to try some different things. And maybe they're not done yet. Maybe they're just like their curiosity now is just that we're just tapping into it. And who knows what's going to happen. But yeah. If the Lions made decisions that actually added up, of course they would get Justin Fields.
I also think they're way more likely to just sit there and draft Caleb Farley or like trade up for Jalen Waddle or something that you didn't see coming, or just sit there and take Micah Parsons. Like, those seem like Patriot moves to me.
And I'll mm-hmm. say it again. The Falcons at four. If this shakes out in the Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and what's the decision here?
Let's say Mac Jones, Trey
Mac
Lance.
Jones. Let's say it's Mac Jones.
Probably Mac Jones, yeah.
If Trey Lance, this hugely buzzy quarterback, is out there, if Justin Fields, this guy that some people are absolutely in love with, is out there, that feels like such a great spot for the Falcons to completely reinvent their roster with a trade that sets them up with assets for days. Go ahead, trade Julio too. Bring back more assets and
trade him to the Patriots. Send that boat that Belichick's got, 9 rings or whatever. Send it all to Atlanta.
What was the Belichick Julio Jones draft connection years ago? There was something. Did he bury him in a draft report or love him? I couldn't remember. There was something, wasn't there, Greg?
There was that. They, I think they were interested in trading up, but then they also, I'm forgetting the receiver, it was whoever the Chiefs took that year that the Patriots had ranked higher than Julio Jones. It was stupid.
Okay. Well, didn't they give a 2 for Mosa Nuh? I mean, I don't know if they're the best at evaluating wide receivers.
No, they've been terrible.
Don't bring that up on the show. Greg is still processing the Mosa Nuh for a second round pick trade. Quickly, Panthers GM Scott Fitterer said the team is going to wait until after the draft to make a decision on Sam Darnold's fifth-year option. This has been kind of murky. It was out there right after the trade that they were going to pick it up, and then all of a sudden it wasn't happening. Once again, if I'm Sam Darnold, and Sam has a close place in my heart, and I hope the best for him, he twisted in the wind for months before the Jets traded him. Now he's right back there again, at least for a few more days, and he's just hoping the Panthers don't take a quarterback high in this draft, because that's going to put him in an even worse spot than he was with the Jets.
It feels very Josh Rosen-y, just this experience that Sam Darnold's going through. Obviously, they're different, but the Panthers, they're keeping their options open. I feel like they're on the prowl right now. Sam Darnold, he's at home just waiting for them to come back. He's just maybe making some dinner while the Panthers, they're out at the bar checking out what's available, what the what else could be flying around, and they're going to wait to see if a quarterback falls to them at 8.
Right. I mean, Darnold is their fallback option, and it was not their plan for the offseason. I mean, do we think that like David Tepper is sitting around with his like feet up on the desk smoking a cigar? No, he's irate. I think they wanted something else, and so it tells me that they're still maybe aggressively looking for to be one of those teams that moves up to get Justin Fields or someone else and solves this issue.
I mean, if the narrative around David Tepper is indeed true, you got a feeling he might have something up his sleeve here to make the big splash that he's been trying to make all offseason and hasn't been able to. And Sam Darnold, God love him, doesn't qualify as a huge splash at QB right now. Finally, Sean Lee. Goodbye, young man. He walks off into the sunset at 34 years old. A member of the Greybeards this year, but in terms of real football, he announces retirement. 5 tackles shy of 1,000 for the Dallas Cowboys. Was a really a linchpin for them Colleen for many years, always dealing with hamstring issues and all sorts of injury stuff. But when he was on the field, there was a period there where he was one of the best.
It's injuries were such a massive part and are such a massive part of his legacy. It's I almost forget how effective he was when he was healthy because he dealt with so many different things. ACL, you're right, always a hamstring, wrist, sports hernia, a toe, a neck, a knee. I mean, you name it, I feel like he had it. But he was so effective for them. He led the Cowboys in tackles in 2011, 2015, 16, 17. And now you have Tyron Crawford, who also retired. So those are two really huge leadership role guys that are now gone from the team. So DeMarcus Lawrence is the longest tenured Cowboy now, and Randy Gregory is the second. So I think you lose a lot more than just like
he hasn't gotten a lot of service time, so I don't know if that counts. He's been like in
just to put it into perspective.
Yeah, that's crazy. Sean Lee, I always think of Wes when I think of Sean Lee because Wes was so early on how good he was, and Sean Lee was the classic like Wes guy where he would say you can tell who's watching the games and who's not when Sean Lee was a young player and was so explosive because a lot of times like the announcers would be like, you know, this guy, he's a hardworking guy. He's really on top of things. It's like, no, Sean Lee was like one of the most explosive athletes to play linebacker in the last 15 years. Like he was a demon on the field, especially early. Like it wasn't that like try hard white guy cliche or whatever, like you weren't watching and Wes was on him early.
Absolutely. All right. That's what's happening in the news. All right, let's get right to it. As promised, one of our favorites, a draft wizard, I call him. I call him Draft Wizard. And if that's not trademarked yet, maybe it's time that this man looks into it. Lance Zierlein, the man, the myth, the legend. Welcome back to the Around the NFL podcast, man.
What's going on? Draft Wizard. I'm gonna look into that and see if anyone's got that trademark.
Wait, Lance is holding a microphone right now like he's doing stand-up at the improv. I like this,
so saying, guys,
maybe do this.
Let's do a little crowd work here. Who's hey, look, I see Sessler over there, man.
Hey.
It's great to see you again. Everything's still good with your mom? See that shirt I've got? Go ask your mom.
This
I like
is so
this
real.
T-shirt. Go ask your mom because it could be like, I don't know, why don't you go ask your mom? Because it could be like a rip, or it's also a real dad thing. Like, I don't know. Go ask your mom.
Yeah. What a great out it is in the home. Lance, let's do a theme here because we know you're doing a ton of media and NFL.com and network stuff right now. Yep. So you're getting inundated, I'm sure, with quarterback talk. But we're this whole segment for the draft, we're not going to talk about any quarterbacks. How about that? Is that work for you,
oh, man,
Mr. Zealand?
I'm fine with that. That's every show. I'm always
all
excited when I
all
don't have to do
play.
Quarterback talk. Yeah. Guard play is.
Guard we don't want to sink the ratings.
Yeah, come on. Your dad was an offensive line coach.
My dad was an offensive line
coach.
That's like if my dad was a chef, all I want to talk about mise en place and different types of knife skills. No, I don't want to. But no, O-line talk. I like talking O-line talk. But, the guard play. I can do it if
no,
you
I'm
like.
Kidding. I'm kidding about the guard.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think your listeners want guard
guards.
Talk.
They're not even humans.
Guard talk.
It's, a, you know.
Guards are humans. They're not even humans.
Let's start here, Lance. It feels like it's like a very offensive, heavy draft, especially early on. You mentioned the trenches, by the way. Defensive tackle, I read. This is not a great year for defensive tackle. What is there like a superstar defensive player coming out of this draft in your mind?
I think there's a few. I think Pat Surtain to me is the best defensive player in this draft, followed very closely by Micah Parsons. And then the guy that I'm a little bit higher on than everyone else seems to be, and that includes NFL teams I talk to, is Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame. I think he's got tremendous, tremendous upside and potential. I remember watching tape from South Carolina State watching Darius Leonard. And Darius had filled up like every stat you could imagine: sacks, interceptions, tackles for loss, tackles, pressures, fumbles recovered. Like any stats you had, he was filling up the stat sheet. And while Owusu-Koramoah is not that same guy from a production standpoint, I see a lot of similarities, at least with the explosiveness, the physicality. I think Owusu-Koramoah is more physical than Darius Leonard was coming out. I don't think he has the instincts that Darius Leonard had. But I don't care that he's 222 pounds or whatever. That's irrelevant. I know that, you know, frankly, I know for a fact that Darius has played in a 218 range, 220 pound range. I mean, that's wide receiver size, and he's still stacking up the numbers. So I think Micah Parsons, you know, from a standpoint of big, fast, physical, he's got all of that that you could possibly want. Surtain, to me, is a top five or six player in this draft, a very clean cornerback. And then Owusu-Koramoah. I think those three guys have the best chance at becoming superstars out of this draft from the defensive side of the ball.
I like the themes in this draft. There's a couple, like, how there's no edge rusher that, like, everyone's got their edge rusher that they like. And the other is just like that the receivers are small. Of all the, like, slot receivers, especially that they're, at least their size profiles to playing inside a little bit more, that all seem to be projected anywhere from like late one, you know, through the second or third round. Do you have any of these like small receivers that gets Lance Zierlein up and excited?
Oh, dude, without question, it's Elijah Moore. I mean, when I watched Elijah Moore this year on tape, every year there will be 10 to 12. And some of these guys, like I like a cornerback out of Michigan State named Shakur Brown, where I really enjoyed watching his tape. He'll get drafted fourth at the earliest, maybe fifth. But that doesn't mean that they don't, you know, I don't think they'll be players or that I didn't enjoy watching their tape. There's a lot of times there's things that will prevent them from being drafted earlier. Elijah Moore, when I watched him, I was like, wow. He checks the box for speed. He's an outstanding route runner, extraordinarily tough. It really doesn't matter who's – a lot of times you'll see a lot of wide receivers have the focus drops when they know pressure's coming into their catch space. You see a lot of focus drops. Not Elijah Moore. He only gets better when the pressure's coming. You want to light him up? Not a problem. He's going to catch it through the contact. So when I finished watching him – and this is a big comp, but when I finished watching him, I just said, you know, I just watched Antonio Brown. I mean, from a footwork standpoint, from the ability to get open, Antonio Brown was a 4.5 40 guy. This Elijah Moore is a 4.4 40 guy, but you couldn't stick Antonio Brown in his prime. You just weren't going to check him. He was too good with his feet. And when I see Elijah Moore, I see the same type of player. So he would be a guy that gets me excited. I think Kadarius Toney from Florida is another one who the undersized cornerbacks that you know, it's, you see a lot to really like about him. And then there's another one who killed players at the Senior Bowl. And that's Kay Johnson from South Dakota State. On tape, no one could guard him in the regular season from 2019. I don't think they played this year. So yeah, well, they didn't play this year. So 2019, no one could guard him. He gets at the Senior Bowl. Nobody could guard him. So I like guys that people can't guard. That's one of the things that I kind of like about wide receivers. When you can't guard them is a favorable thing for me, at least. Well, I like to
getting open.
Yeah. Like the N'Keal Harry. Oh, we'll just throw it up there. He's so big and strong. He'll make plays. I still like guys that get open. Those guys tend to play for
Lance,
a long
we already
time.
Brought up Mosanu on today's show. Greg can't take the Harry conversation on top of it.
I'd say Kay Johnson is another one of those smaller slot corners that I really like. And he could be there in the fourth or even fifth, sixth round. I mean, you're going to get him in day three later. And I think he'll be an NFL starting slot at some point.
You spend so much time writing all of these draft profiles, and I can't even imagine how many hours you pour into it. So you know these guys through and through, and you watch all their tape. Who is the guy that you think will be a surprise night one selection?
Not a QB.
Well, yeah, okay. So these are predictions based on things I'm hearing. Okay.
Okay.
So I would say Tyson Campbell, a cornerback from Georgia, I think is going to end up in the first round of the mock. I had him in the first round of my first mock. And it's funny, I go back and look at my mock 1.0. If you go back and look at that, this is before I'm hearing anyone say anything, the other media members, and it's probably my most pure mock. And a lot of times my very first mock has some very interesting things in there where I'm just relying on what I'm seeing, and it ends up being more accurate, at least at certain positions for certain players.
The uncut stuff, like that's the pure stuff. You put it right into the system. It's going straight to your head 1.0.
Exactly.
I don't need this stepped on 3.0, 4.0 stuff.
Tight, 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 tight. So that's the way you, That's the way I do it for my mock draft. And so I had Greg Newsome in there. I had Tyson Campbell. I had Elijah Moore before the other mock drafts had it, because it just made sense to me. I mean, I wrote these guys up, and these are the kind of players that go in the first round. And so I think Tyson Campbell will find his way in there. You know, Colleen, as far as other players who are going to potentially surprise, there could be others. I'll throw out just a couple names that might be kind of crazy, but Peyton Turner out of University of Houston, Milton Williams out of Louisiana Tech. If Christian Barmore falls out of the first, which I think is possible, and it is a bad, and as Dan mentioned, it's a bad defensive tackle draft. So at some point, somebody's going to say, look, these are the best defensive tackles. We got to get this guy before anyone else does, or that, you know, you can close that category down. That could cause somebody to reach up there, especially if Barmore doesn't end up going in the first round, the defensive tackle from Alabama.
One strategy, if you're watching on YouTube, that I employ during these types of things is when you mention a player that I've never heard of, I just sort of nod like, oh yeah, of course, like that guy, absolutely. But so I have a little
you're
bit
like
of
like Milton from La Tech. Yes, sure. That's one of my
I have
my
a little bit of a two-parter for you. Number one, because it's such a weird draft, and like we're already hearing from like Adam Schefter that teams are, you know, obviously a little piqued with the lack of rock solid medical information on players, and that stuff even now is still trickling in. So one, do you think that over the next couple of days we might get some explosive medical reports that take guys and just throw them deep into hyperspace? And then part two, what, like, how hammered do you get the minute the draft ends? Like, you're obviously entering into a wide berth of, like, you don't need to chime in on anything.
Answer
just
part
on
two
a level
first.
Of 1 to 10.
Okay, so,
part two first.
So, yeah, so the other day, just after Total Access, I went and got hammered with tiki drinks at a tiki bar here because it's socially distanced, but I don't need to be that far away from one of the giant skulls with that 10 different types of rums in it.
Right.
So if I
you don't share straws like the tiki thing where it's like 10 straws in it.
Well, me and my wife, yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Different.
Yeah.
Different.
And if you have a couple that you trust, like we've got our friends from Belize who came down. Shout out to Kelly and McCool from the Phoenix. Shout out to them. They're the ones that are most likely to go get a little torn down with. So if I do that just after a basic TA, you can imagine what happens after a draft. Now, previously, you know, back in the good old days, I was always flying out to California. So I was in L.A., and so I might, you know, go do something with our buddy Mark Istook. I might go do something with my friend Eric Layden, who's an actor there, and but not to the point that I, you know, after the draft's over, I mean, I have to make a flight and get home at some point during that next day, usually. And so, it's a little tough. So, I pick out a day and then we'll just see what happens on that day some point afterwards.
When do you start writing your profiles for the next year?
Ugh. It kind of starts in the summer. I usually do a summer kind of, it depends on, so when NFL.com would ask me to write my, give us 10 players to watch at every position. Well, that was really a head start for me where I'm already watching. I had a really high grade on Justin Herbert after his sophomore year when I watched him in the summer. Then I didn't like Najee Harris as much this year when I watched him in the summer. And then the version I saw this year was like, wow, this is not the same guy I saw last year when I watched him from 2019. All right, that I saw in the summer from his 2019 tape. So I'll start watching Colleen in the summer, but I'm not writing the profile. I'm kind of, you know, acclimating myself to their strengths and weaknesses, because I love how people reach out to me in my direct messages. I left them open, which is probably a mistake since I get so many sweet huddle videos of high schoolers now. Like, this is my son. You need to see him. He'll be the next big wide receiver. And
tough stitch.
Yeah. Like this guy's going to be an incredible wide receiver out of, you know, Maine. And I just think I don't need Maine high school receivers in my DMs ever, never. I don't even want them from college.
Preach.
Maine college. But so I will.
Screw Maine.
Yeah. No offense, but, you know, wait until you get to the senior bowl. So
like if we had to get rid of one or two, like a handful of states. Maine's on that list.
Rhode Island. I'm going to slow down with the Maine assassination.
No,
attempt,
Rhode
we
Island.
Might have listeners.
No, Rhode Island. You just have to do it, you know, at the senior bowl. I just need to see you do it against better competition rather than your huddle tape from high school. But So I do have people ask all the time, hey, Lance, I know you're busy with draft, with writing up 500 profiles. Just wanted to know who you, what you thought about this wide receiver from the 2022 draft from SMU. I'm like, dude, I don't have time. I can, if you're not in this year's draft, I, you don't exist to me. I don't care until the summer, and then you exist again. And it's not personal, but I just don't have the time to be worrying about who's in next year's draft.
It's true dedication
through all this stuff, you know.
Lance, can I, going back to red flags and medical stuff, there's one prospect that I'm completely obsessed with now, and for the only reason that we do that silly mock draft special for NFL Network, and I was tasked with a 23rd overall pick, the Jets' second first round pick, and I selected with much trepidation Landon Dickerson, the Alabama center. I feel like
Lance is giving him a big thumbs down.
I love Landon Dickerson.
Let me finish the setup here. So Landon Dickerson, he seems to me the guy that has the biggest ratio of where he could go in this draft, right? I'm seeing him going to the bottom of the first round, a lot of mock drafts. And then you see some red flags because he's had so many injuries that he could be going in the middle rounds, huge boomer bust guy, maybe the biggest in the draft, right?
I think that I think Gregory Rousseau might be. I don't talk to a team who likes him in the first. Like, nobody I've talked to likes him in the first. Some teams have third round grades on him. But he's big. He's a long guy. He plays the position. There's just not a lot of tape, only 1 year tape on him. So he's one of those guys that could end up in the first or could fall way back into maybe the middle to late second at the latest. I think that the guys – you did hit on something, though. How teams perceive injuries creates the biggest boom-bust factor. Well, not boom-bust, but the biggest chasm between high-end and low-end picks. I've heard enough from enough people who say Landon Dickerson, and I already know about his injury past just, you know, studying this, but I think the medicals are such that he is not going to go in the first round. So I liked him in the first round of two of my mock drafts. I think he's a good football player. He's the type of guy that you want in your locker room. Everything about him I love for his attitude and the way he's going to change the culture, but it's just the medicals are just tough to get around. So I don't think he goes in the first. I think he falls out. And if you want a guy who's going to, I don't think the high end is in the first. I think when you're talking about a guy who could be, you know, upper, lower, you start talking about injury guys like Caleb Farley. You talk about potentially Terrace Marshall, who's got some medicals with a foot, and he's got some stuff there, but he's also got potential first round value. So it's always going to be the injuries or the character. And as far as the character stuff, the two guys, Micah Parsons, who has some stuff that happened at Penn State, and then Jalen Phillips, who's had injuries and has had some questions about character and football, football character specifically. The teams I talk to about both those players just say too talented to fall out of the first.
It's weird that Mac Jones's DUIs don't matter.
Whoa. Who, Greg?
Mac Jones's DUIs. It's weird to me.
Let me ask you a question.
Remember Dak Prescott?
How many DUIs? How many DUIs does he have?
I thought he had two.
Yeah, because the internet told you. He's got one. Oh, he's and got I one. Think that's interesting. I brought that up on my radio show.
He's a quarterback, but that's cool.
Yeah, it's funny that Twitter started saying he had two DUIs. And I had to check with teams. I'm like, hey, I've only got one in 2017. And they said, yeah, he's only got one. But on Twitter, it said, I'm sorry, what'd you say, Lance? Did you say on Twitter it said? And then they hung up the phone on me. So
that's good. That's good to
I
get
did wanna, Yeah, I did want to point that out, that it's I saw Sessler had that number, right? It's one. I have not talked to anybody who said he had two. But that's one of those things that once it gets put out there into, you know, into the internet, it turns into something that we all work off of. And that just isn't accurate. Now, what the hell? What were we talking about again?
Well, can I ask you about Micah Parsons? Now, maybe this is also way off, but did I read that he effectively, as a one-person band, started a riot? Because I kind of like that, unless I read that wrong. I thought that someone he started a riot somewhere.
He's a one-man riot in high school cafeteria. That's accurate.
I like that, though. That would make me want to bring him into my building.
Who's a wrestler? I get a feeling Hansus will know this. The one-man gang.
Yes.
He's kind of like a one-man riot in high school. Yes. And honestly, I'm probably going to use that phrase as a complimentary phrase in scouting next year is like a one-man riot on the defensive line.
Because
it's actually a
Aaron
hugely
Donald
positive
is a one-man riot right
that's
there.
Perfect.
That's 100%. And that's one of those things that for me, it'll get stuck and I'll say, oh, this is a good one, a one-man riot. He did start that. That's one of the concerns. There's an issue that you can Google and find out, a hazing incident that happened in at Penn State with a teammate, and the teammate, I believe, is suing him. I'm not sure where that stands right now. So you do have a couple of incidents where the hazing got out of control, wildly out of control.
Isaiah Wilson's like, stay away from this guy.
Well, Isaiah can't tell anyone anything. I mean, honestly, after Isaiah – no, Micah gets out there and is going to play. He just has edge. And so you have to find out, is this a bad guy or is he a guy with edge? I think the teams I talk to think he's a guy with edge. You always know he's going to be a little extra in everything that he does on the field, and you want to make sure he doesn't do it off the field. But from what I've told, it's all manageable. He's just an alpha player who's got an alpha demeanor, and it's something that you have to keep an eye on. But his love of the game is not really in question by anyone. And that's clearly an issue with Isaiah Wilson. But shout out to you for recalling for bringing back the Isaiah Wilson thing to make your point, though.
Thank you. And by the way, One Man Gang, that was a wrestler in the early 80s. He then rebranded himself, and this is 80s wrestling.
As they often do in the 80s.
Yeah, it was problematic in a lot of ways when you go back and look at the plot lines. He's a big, 6'8", 6'9", 350-pound white dude, and he rebranded himself Akeem the African Dream.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's not real. Is that real?
True Stop. Story.
That's true.
And that's
Akeem,
in the 80s.
African Dream.
So, every wrestling character in the 80s would take whatever was in the news then. I remember there was immediately, as soon as something happened with a plane being shot down and Libya was involved, there was a wrestler named the Libyan. Like, you would never see that now. Oh, and if you do you go through the timeline, Akeem the African Dream, Akeem Olajuwon, Akeem the Dream Olajuwon, just lazy branding, lazy wrestling branding is what that is.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You're
about
right.
That. All right. Now, before we say goodbye, Lance, since we started it with you looking like you were at the Chuckle Hut in downtown Houston, I'm going to give you a subject. And then you're going to just give me a riff. Give me what you got. You got five kids. Give me a riff on being a dad to five kids during pandemic life.
They went viral with a fight. Two of them got into a fight during basketball game in the driveway. And Lamar Jackson got a hold of it, retweeted it. And then it just went bananas. They ended up on SportsCenter. Yesterday, those same two kids, or I'm sorry, on Friday, they were both suspended for their basketball team for leaving the school and walking to the store so they could go buy an orange Fanta and some potato chips. Mm. They just ghosted the school for about an hour
them.
And a half.
They were both concerns right there.
Huge character red flag.
It seems like you and I have a similar lid over the situation in our household. So I like that.
Check that. You could find that anywhere. I don't know if you want that to be something that is a part of your family history forever. But
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Well, the second child with the basketball, throwing the basketball, that's where I thought, things got real
there. You grew up with brothers or cousins, that stuff happens. But there weren't cameras back then for us anyway. All right. There you go. Lance, you've said it all. You've done it all. you're not the African Dream. To me, you're the American Dream. And we'd love to have you back anytime.
Just your role, the American Dream, baby.
We'll get your Broadway rankings next time. Lance has a big time Broadway guy. Just has a lot of hot takes there. Let's get it. Next time.
All right, next time, Lance. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right.
Before we go, I do want to point out, because we didn't on this podcast officially, we did on our network show, but that it was a birthday for our host. What is it? The new old Blue Eyes? For your birthday, I'll say
don't
that.
Act like you don't know.
I'll
you
say
know.
That nickname. That's my birthday present to you. But he celebrated over the weekend, and we tried to get a cameo from one of his favorite players of all time in time for our TV show. It came a little late, but we should just play this on the podcast. Ricky, let's see.
I love it.
Hey, Danny, Wayne Trebek from New York Jets. Got a message from Ricky Hollywood. Want to reach out to you. Tell me you're a big Jet fan and a fan of mine. Appreciate it, man. You know, I had a blast in my 11 years. Hopefully gave you a lot to cheer about. A big reason I am reaching out to you, I heard you're having your birthday. So very happy birthday to you, Dan. Just want to let you know everybody's thinking about you. Love you. You know, hopefully you have a great day, safe day. Wanted me to tell you that you have the best hair out of anyone I've ever seen, but I'm concerned they want people to call you the new old Blue Eyes. Not sure what that means, man, but sounds like you got some great friends there rising you a little bit. Listen, I know it was a tough year, 2 wins. You know, there's nothing you can do about it now, but they got a great new coach, coaching staff. We got the second pick in the draft, man. We're getting a quarterback. Not sure which one, but young guys did well. You know, Becton and, should have made the Pro Bowl. Quinn should have made the Pro Bowl. So there's a lot to be excited about. So look forward to that in 2021. Hopefully you have a great 2021. And I wanted to give a shout out to your Jet dad. Heard he's the real Jets Aww. Fan. So enjoy your day. Happy birthday, Dan. And go Jets. Take care, man.
That was so, I do have great friends. And I thank all you guys for that. Because my birthday went in the shitter really quick on Friday. We did our network show and I was about to have a nice family day and just enjoy myself, have a few Tito's. And then my eldest son, Jack, has an accident in school where he gets a cut on his head that requires a visit to the urgent care and stitches. And it's any parents, you guys all get it that you just feel so helpless, especially if it happens when you're not around. So that was weighing on me heavily. And I also had gotten my second vaccine shot, which was great, the day before my birthday. But then that was hitting me pretty hard. So it was like not the best birthday. But then when the Wayne Corbett video arrived on Friday night, that salvaged things a little bit. And I thank you for that. Corbett was, for people that are younger, don't really know, like he was kind of like an Edelman prototype type dude, like a guy that didn't get a lot of love. In fact, he's a former Hofstra wide receiver out in Long Island in New York. And the Jets used to train there in Hofstra. And part of the agreement that the college had, the university had with the Jets was, you could use our grounds for training camp, but we get to send one of our undrafted guys to camp and he gets a shot. Corbett was that guy and he became one of the best receivers in franchise history. And if you actually look at his numbers, stacks up with Edelman. He didn't have the postseason resume. But I love Wayne Corbett, the first jersey I ever bought with my own money. So, yes, if you were looking for Joe Namath, as Mark had told me, that would have been great and awesome. But Corbett actually is more near and dear to my heart. Number 80, the Green Lantern, as he was known. Nickname. That
I will mention to you that we were sourcing this for multiple reasons, but ideally for your birthday and your pleasure. We did look into Lindsay Lohan. That was above our price point. So you got Wayne Corbett, but I think that we did fine. We are good friends.
Yeah, shout out to Jason Kleiman for thinking of that.
He was so Corbett sweet, and too, and thoughtful.
Yeah. And yeah, Wayne was like, he kind of gave off like a Connor Orr vibe, too. I really, it was good. The whole thing was
he's
very
also like,
awesome.
I just, and this is comes from being like an East Coast guy at heart, and like, he grew up in Garfield, Wayne Corbett, which is exit 157 on the Garden State. I grew up just over the border at exit 172. So, like, he's like every guy I went to high school with, basically. And he, for him to carve out, and that was really nice. So you're going to get me emotional. It's great. Good stuff.
I didn't think we'd get into Garden State Parkway talk today, but
GSP
I'm into
talk.
It. Yeah.
You need to make up for something that you've had two of these birthdays during the pandemic here.
Fine. I actually had something to moan about, but now I feel like in a good place emotionally, so I'm going to save that for tomorrow, Ricky. So let's hold off on something I'm angry about, because who needs that right now in the world? Connie.
Yes.
When are you leaving? When are you heading over to Cleveland,
tomorrow,
Ohio?
Tomorrow morning at like 5 a.m., I'm out.
So you're
there's no direct flights from L.A.
to Cleveland?
No.
Come on, Mark. You're better than that.
I've been to Cleveland like twice in my life. Like I'm not in charge of the airspace.
I might be.
I mean, if you're gonna be like punching down at Cincinnati all the time, you gotta puff your chest out about Cleveland.
I will do whatever I please.
I do want to. It does make me want to check now since you brought it up, Greg. Are there direct flights from L.A. to Cincinnati? I don't know.
Why?
That could be a W in a big spot. for Cincy. That's all.
For what purpose?
We'll send Mark out there.
I don't know. Anything else? Anybody else have anything to add?
Good. Miss you guys. This has been nice hanging.
It has been nice, Ricky. I mean, Connie. Excuse me.
Oh. Just, okay. I see how it is. Not, all right.
Don't take it personally. Cool. I'm cool, sorry. Cool. And Erica, why don't you jump in here? How
hey,
you doing,
I'm
by the
Colleen
way?
I'm Colleen Wolf. Hey.
Since I brought you
Hello.
Up.
Hello.
Nice haircut, Ricky.
Thanks.
Nice job.
Thanks,
did a good job with the hair. Good work.
Well. Yeah, took a little help. Couple strands were much longer, and I left like that. So Jet had to take scissors to my head.
Did you go to Supercuts? Like,
yeah, I should have. It probably would have been better. God dang.
It's a mask issue. The same thing happened to me. It's a common problem.
Yeah. That's it.
Did you not speak with the stylist at a later point? It feels like she got off scot-free here.
I feel bad.
Sure.
Not going back is the biggest punishment you can give her. So that's
yeah.
up to you.
Right. Good lesson in consumerism from Greg there at the end of the show.
Yeah, I'll teach her.
You're done.
Level-headedness really comes through in a big spot. All right. Awesome. Love it. We got four more shows coming this week. We got one tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, and we're going to have special guests. We're going to do our sandwich props for the draft. Thursday night, of course, and then Saturday night recap. Great, fun analysis. Guests galore. So stay tuned. This is Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, The Tiny Box, The Old Boss, Ricky Hollywood, Behind the Virtual Glass. Until Tuesday, heed the call.